It's Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. I hope you're well. I know you're frustrated, sad, angry even. In the wake of two mass shootings in Texas and Ohio, Angelenos today are thinking a whole lot about El Pasoans and Daytonians. And we're still fresh off a mass shooting at a community festival in Northern California only 8 days ago.
The one in Gilroy, only a few people died, and that one's sort of been forgotten already, but that one was still very scary because it was just a public fair type event. It was celebrating garlic. Why would that be a target? That's insane.
We was trying to figure out, what can we do? Is there a way where we could see a sign of when it happened and who can come in and help? Because I think that if the guy that did the Giro thing, if they had a sign, if more people could step in and try to help him, he probably wouldn't have got to this far.
I'm from Australia, and I think it's disgusting. In Australia, we're not allowed to have any automatic weapons. They had to be all handed in. That's what they should do here.
I think what's happening in the two shootings is horrible, and I believe that it's instigated by President Trump, okay? Who I think should be called Pinocchio. President Pinocchio. That's my statement to him.
I'm a big believer that the media makes it worse. Mass covering of it leads to more violence.
We try to make some sense of what happened. There are certainly no easy answers. Because hate is germinated and grown in many ways. It has many roots and manifestations, instigated by many things. But one thing we're increasingly coming to understand is that the shooter in El Paso, we don't need to give his name, was targeting immigrants. According to a 4-page document that law enforcement are almost certain came from him, the shooter identifies immigrants coming to the United States as invaders, people who came to take the jobs and opportunities of Americans of European descent, white people. It's a common trope among white nationalists and white supremacists. Rudy Espinoza heads up the organization Inclusive Action for the City, and he's worked with the immigrant community in L.A. for many years. Hi, Rudy.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right. Obviously baffled still, like a lot of folks. What were some of your first thoughts when you heard the news over the weekend?
It's kind of hard to piece together my thoughts when I heard what happened. I mean, I think to a certain extent, I wasn't surprised because there's been a lot of inaction from our leaders, inaction to protect our communities. And so to a certain extent, I wasn't surprised that this was happening.
How would you describe this moment that we're in?
I think that we're in a really important moment for our society and our country. It's a moment where we have an opportunity to stand up for what is right and to advocate for policies and make sure that policies are in place that reflect our values. And this moment is really scary because this moment is asking us to dig deep down inside of us to stand up for what's right. And I think a lot of us are scared. We don't know what's coming. But I think in these moments, we have an opportunity to do something really special and to come together and to stand up for the people that we know add a ton of value in our communities.
I'm sure you have spoken to some folks since the shooting took place in El Paso, certainly on Saturday. What are they telling you about their fears? You said it's a scary moment. What kind of fear are we talking about?
Well, I've had the privilege of working with a variety of different community members and micro entrepreneurs in our communities here in Los Angeles. My organization does advocacy work. We've done a lot of work in the street vending community for a long time with many partners. And what they've told us was that they have seen much less people out on the street on weekends when they expect many more pedestrians. And the reason why is they are connecting it to the rhetoric that they're seeing on TV from our elected leaders. And they're afraid, and their customers are afraid, and so that's impacting their businesses. And so we are even hearing street vendors that that have people that pass by and spew, hatred at them. And so there is certainly a lot of people that are scared because they're seeing this on TV, they're seeing their leaders say bad things, and they're seeing private citizens acting upon this hatred. But then there's also a lot of people that are saying, you know what, we have to stand up and our community is strong and our culture is something that we need to honor and to value. And so I'm also seeing the flip side of a lot of community leaders coming together saying we need to stand up for what's right and we need something more in our country.
T- Tell us what that means. What does that mean, standing up? I mean, how does that look?
Well, I think from the folks that I've been talking to, I think part of it is standing up and calling out and calling truth to power. The fact is that what we see is a growing culture of white supremacy in our country. And I think that part of the answer is saying, hey, this is an issue and we have to call it out when we see it. And we also have to intentionally act to create systems that protect our community members, all types of community members, from white supremacy.
What do you tell folks who are more afraid of being shot than even of being deported by ICE? I mean, is it a different kind of fear?
Well, I think certainly getting shot and, you know, being in some of the situations that we saw this weekend, I think it's obviously more finite. It reminds us that life is fragile and that any second, you know, our life can be taken away. But, you know, I think it's another form of violence that we're seeing in our communities. Getting deported is also a form of violence. It's a disruption in our community and in our families. And what I tell people is that we have to stick together. We have to be educated and be aware of our surroundings. And we also have to be very clear about the pathway for a better life. And that pathway includes getting engaged politically and getting engaged in our community and being aware that of the systems that are contributing to this. Part of those systems that are contributing to this is, you know, a lack of gun control and a lack of folks that are willing to call out, you know, what the issue is. In this case, it's very clear that it's white supremacy and hatred against the immigrant community.
I mean, that's been around for a while, and it's even manifested in shootings before. We know there have been targeted shootings in the past. For you personally, though, when you heard the news, for you as you know, an Angeleno of Latin descent here in Los Angeles, how does it make you feel? What goes through your mind?
Man, it makes me feel really discouraged. You know. Definitely, you know, you feel depressed and you wonder what the future holds for us. But I think that, you know, I do this type of work because I love Los Angeles and I love our communities and I see the resilience every single day. And so when I see these things happening, I know that there's a better way for us if we come together and if we're really clear and we stand up for our values. Yeah, I go through a range of emotions, but I think at the end of the day, the reason why we do this work and the reason why is because, you know, we have hope and we see that there is a way out of this.
Rudy Espinoza, who is Executive Director of Inclusive Action for the City. Rudy, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Margot Bennett is the Executive Director at Women Against Gun Violence, and she's with us right now. Hi, Margot.
Hi.
Talk to me about how you got involved with gun control activism.
Actually, it was a few decades ago when there was a mass shooting in San Ysidro at a McDonald's.
Yeah, I remember that. We're more than 20 people were killed, right? I think it was 21.
That's right, including a baby. So I hadn't, and actually until recently, hadn't been personally impacted by gun violence. But I knew even then that we had to do something about gun violence in America.
What about until recently? How were you affected recently?
Well, you know, ultimately, with the statistics being what they are, we're all going to have a personal story to share. And a very dear friend of mine a few years ago committed suicide by gun.
Mm. I know a lot of us, Margot, were feeling sad. We're feeling frustrated. Some folks feel defeated, like there's absolutely nothing that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give them? Would you give somebody who wants to do something but doesn't know what to do?
Yeah, it is very easy to feel discouraged in the United States as a gun violence prevention activist. But I think it's really important to know that even small acts can be significant. You don't have to do something big or flashy. You can make a phone call. You can have a conversation with your neighbor. You can write a letter to the editor. You can make sure that you know all the facts and then be the truth teller. And that's important. This morning, I listened to the president say lies. You know, this is not a mental health issue. This is a gun accessibility issue. Yesterday, I heard Representative Kevin McCarthy lie. He said this is a video game issue, a violent media issue. That's untrue. And so it's important that we know the truth, know the facts, know the data, and share that information with others.
I mean, statistics show that where there are video games in other countries, it's still disproportionate in the United States compared to how much money is spent on video games, right? As opposed
to
how many people are killed by gun violence.
Right. This is an NRA talking point. They spent $54 million on the 2016 campaign. And so now the people that they spent that money on are, you know, spouting those NRA talking points as though they're the truth. And they're not.
Even the dog is angry today. And
yeah,
I know a lot
I'm
of
so
people.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, there are a lot of folks, Margot, in terms of after a situation like this, and we're all, again, very sad. There's also a lot of momentum. And you hear now's not the time to politicize something like that. You mentioned what you can do, albeit small, you can do whatever to get in on that, to get involved in gun control reform. What's the best way to capitalize on the momentum that we see with people on social media, people who are angry and want to do something?
Well, here's the most important thing you can do. You can vote. And you have to vote locally and statewide and federally. It's very easy for us all to wring our hands. It feels like we can't make change, but we can, and we just have to vote. That's, I believe, the way we're going to make a difference.
I mean, it seems like the same talking points you mentioned, the video game argument. I'm sure there are a lot of conservative people as well who don't want to fear going to the shopping mall or to McDonald's or to a movie theater or even elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, is this something where people can come together and find some sort of common sense resolution?
I think we already have. I mean, 97% of Americans favor universal background checks. And that includes Republicans, Democrats, independents, gun owners, non-gun owners, NRA members. We can come together. We already have. But what we can't do is get it through the Senate or signed by this particular president.
Have you seen any change since you became active on this issue?
Well, I think in California, we've passed some really good, strong gun laws, and they've worked. Unfortunately, other states have actually weakened their gun laws. And, you know, just like at Gilroy, you can buy your gun in a state with weak gun laws and bring it here.
In Nevada.
Right. And that's why we need strong federal laws. And that's why we need to vote.
Margot Bennett, Executive Director at Women Against Gun Violence. Margot, thank you.
Thank you so much.
We're going to keep covering these stories throughout the day, by the way, on KCRW. So stick around. All Things Considered, of course, yours from 3 to 7 tonight as well. Something else we're watching is the Dow, and stocks took a nosedive today, more than 760 points being shed. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, so we'll keep you updated on that with Marketplace at 2 o'clock in just a few minutes. Stick around. Coming up next on this program, from frustration and fear to ferocity, the women's national soccer team came to L.A. and brought with it the fight for equal pay. It's Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now to something a little more positive. Today we take you to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena.
Pasadena, you guys look good. Are you ready to have a good time tonight?
That's where on Saturday night, the women's national soccer team, world champions, kicked off their victory tour after their impressive World Cup run, after beating the Netherlands in the finals, after inspiring not only soccer fans, but girls and boys, and women and men all around the world.
And now, starting lineup for the United States.
37,000 fans came to the Rose Bowl to watch the team play the Republic of Ireland and celebrate, including Maya Romo, a soccer player herself, who's totally inspired by this group of female athletes.
Wow, just the power that emanates from this group of women. They're just like what they represent, what they stand for, the individuality that like just like emerges from them. Like they're just such powerful people, and I respect that so much. I respect what they stand for and how they just are so courageous to be who they are as individuals and as players and then as a team.
The team was ready to celebrate with its fans too, including Jill Ellis, who just announced that she's stepping down from her head coach position in October after this tour.
What does a victory tour do? It allows you to share, you know, share the trophy, share the moment, share the experience of the summer.
Now, Saturday's game was actually the first time that any of these U.S. players had played at the Rose Bowl, even though it's such an iconic stadium in women's soccer history. After all, it's the place where 20 years ago, the 99ers, as they're called, beat China in a shootout to win the Women's World Cup. You probably remember Brandi Chastain scoring the winning penalty kick and then ripping her shirt off. Rose Lavelle, the U.S. team's World Cup breakout star midfielder, was just 4 at the time.
Yeah, it was definitely special to be able to kind of step foot on the field that they won the 99 World Cup in. I feel like they've left a legacy that this program has kept living, and yeah, it was cool.
The U.S. beat Ireland 3-0 on Saturday. Tobin Heath, Lindsay Horan, and Carly Lloyd provided the goals. It was a big party, but it was also about a lot more. And Kirsten Zilm was there. She joins me now in the studio to talk about it. Kirsten, hello.
Hello.
Sounds like a lot of Angelinos came out to celebrate this U.S. women's national team.
Yes, they did. And it was a wonderful, perfect evening for a soccer game in the Rose Bowl. Of course, a little subdued at times also because of the news from the mass shooting in El Paso. There was a moment of silence before the game. But the fans were really there to celebrate. Everybody came out, old and young. They were draped in flags. They were wearing their favorite player's jersey. They were having just a good time with those who inspired them when they watched the World Cup in France from here at home.
I like to play soccer, so like they inspire me to continue playing throughout my life, I guess.
Same thing, basically. I want to be like them when I'm older, hopefully. I want to just inspire younger girls and play sports professionally, basically.
It's just beautiful and amazing to be able to, you know, see such a great and strong team that has great skills on and off the field that are bringing issues to light that may be considered controversial, but that do impact many different people.
I mentioned, Kirsten, that the coach, Jill Ellis, just announced that she's stepping down after this victory tour. She led the team to back-to-back World Cup victories and has this impressive record with the U.S. women's national team, 103 wins, only 7 losses. Now, she's talked about maybe moving on to coach a men's team, right?
Yeah, that's what she's talked about. But she says now she has no specific plans yet what to do. It just felt for her like it was time for a change. She comes full circle with 2 World Cups on a high. She wants to spend more time with family, with daughter and wife in Florida. And she's open now for opportunities, including coaching a men's team. But she also said, this should not even be something that we talk about. It should be equally normal for women to coach male athletes as it is the other way around.
I'll be honest, do I have a burning desire to coach a men's team? Probably not, because I really enjoy coaching what I'm doing. And so most people see that as an elevated step. And I feel pretty good about the step of where our program is and where our team is. And yeah, my hope is that it's not something that raises eyebrows. It's something like people now actively seek out those women, because I think we offer a different balance. I think we offer expertise, but I think, you know, we're wired differently. That's how it is.
The issue and the challenge, I guess, of equality between men and women on and off the field has really become central to this team. This is what we're talking about now. 28 players have actually filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation. I'm sure a lot of folks know what's going on. Did this come up during the game?
Yes, it did. You might remember the chant "Equal Pay" coming from the stands after the World Cup final in Lyon, France. Well, the fans had the same chant at the Rose Bowl on Saturday.
Remind us what that lawsuit is about. What are the players asking for?
Their main argument is that the organization has, quote, institutionalized gender discrimination, and that that needs to change. Their arguments are that women are paid less than men, even though they are way more successful. As we know, the last time men didn't even make it to the World Cup. And it's not only about the money, of course. It's also that women have worse travel and playing conditions, and they are less promoted by the Soccer Federation than the men are. The players just joined forces with the Time's Up movement. They had a meeting while they were here in LA over the last few days, but the players didn't have any specifics around what they would be doing together.
Last week, the head of U.S. Soccer, Carlos Cordero, wrote an open letter in response to the women, and he said that U.S. Soccer paid female players more than $34 million in salaries and game bonuses between 2010 and 2018. It only paid the men $26 million. So he's saying they paid more, actually, to women. Are the women actually being paid more than men?
Yes, they are. If you look only at the salary that they get from the U.S. Soccer Federation, the women get the salary from the federation. The men are paid by the pro soccer clubs that they play for. But the men make much more money in the bonus system and the prize money at tournaments. It's all a rather complicated structure. And the letter that you just mentioned, that totally didn't sit well with the women. Some of them called it funky accounting, and they say they just want the same payment structure as the men have. And by the way, the men's national team, they published a statement of support for the women, and they said, quote, "This is more of the same from a federation that is constantly in disputes and litigation and focuses on increasing revenue and profits without any idea how to use that money to grow the sport." So the players' lawsuit is now heading into mediation, and at the game, when they were asked about it, the players avoided saying anything too specific about the lawsuit. I think exactly for that reason. Here's Alex Morgan.
I think that we've given them and the public all the information that we have, and what we've continued to be is transparent, and so we'll continue to be so.
All right, very diplomatic there. The homegrown soccer star, Alex Morgan, she's from San Dimas, right?
Right.
Yeah. Now, Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan are maybe the best-known players from the U.S. women's team. They didn't play over the weekend because of injuries. Were the fans upset that they didn't get to see them play?
Of course, yeah. They were disappointed. They are both the absolute fan favorites, but both of them were on the sidelines. They were part of a public practice. They signed T-shirts, posters, soccer balls, everything at the practice and at the game. They just said, "We need some more time to get back to complete health." Megan Rapinoe even said, "I have no idea how the other players do it, that they're back on the pitch." And Coach Ellis said, "They will join the Victory Tour, the games, when they say that they are ready. There's not going to be any pressure on them."
What are the next stops on this tour, by the way, after L.A.?
So first they go to Philadelphia, then St. Paul, Minnesota, Charlotte, North Carolina, Chicago. And then they just hope to keep the momentum going to have the fans come back to their games with their pro teams. The National Women's Soccer League has 9 teams. Unfortunately, no team here.
No team, no women's team here in Los Angeles. There was a team back between 2007 and 2010. It folded, though. But during that time, there was Brazilian superstar Marta, who was playing
right here.
And I would suspect, Kirsten, that, you know, with the excitement of the women's national team and how many World Cups that they've played and all of that surrounding it, that maybe Los Angeles in the future would get a women's team again.
That would be great, right?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly an exciting story. Sounds like there was a lot of fun over at the Rose Bowl over the weekend. Kirsten Zilm, thanks for bringing us that story today.
Sure. It was a lot of fun to go through the game and be here.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, what to do about the 405 through the Sepulveda Pass? Oh, so many suggestions. Next on KCRW, The Business. Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Jenna Cagle, PJ Shahamat, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, and Christian Bordahl. Key players on this show were online, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Get to know your region better. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Keep your head up. Thanks for the ear. Have a great day.